Welcome to Human Signal. Today's episode is something that's been boiling under the surface for decades. A generational conflict we just can't afford anymore. Our guest, Jasher Cox, brings a unique lens as a higher educational leader, athletic director, and builder of teams that have changed the game for institutions like Allen University and Notre Dame. Welcome, my brother, to Human Signal.
Well, Dr. Floyd, thank you very much for having me. I felt like, you know, you gave me the announcement like I was part of the starting lineup for the Chicago Bulls, so I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, man.
Appreciate the kind words, and, you know, I shared this with you previously. You know, again, my brother was the pipeline that led me to Auburn, and even before I was even a student, you know, just crawling around on campus and following his footsteps, you know, the one path he led me to was you guys, man. And I felt like your era of people that looked like us, you know, started the pathways for more to come through in the years ahead. So incredibly grateful for the introduction and just being around you guys and seeing it from afar before I even enrolled.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, man. Listen, it's always been good, man, to watch you, you know, climb and grow in your career, man. It's like my little brother, you know what I'm saying? He's been doing out here doing his thing, and I've always been real proud of you. And I talk to everyone, all the young kids and everybody, and I point them in all the directions in my network of people who I interacted with, and you're one of the ones that I do point to. Your brother. No, so, you know, we're not going to leave Ish out. We're going to get the Ish in 26. We're going to get the Ish in 26.
Down the road. He'll be fine. That's right.
All right, man. So let's jump into, let's get the show started and let's jump in. Okay. Sure. So, Jasher, let's start by rewinding history. Sure. For years, the real problem was never talent. It was a rigged system. How have you seen career ladders dismantled and opportunities hoarded in your journey through higher ed and collegiate athletics?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And I've always felt like in any place, whether it's higher ed or you know, the corporate sector, the success is defined by making sure you make good hires first. And I think oftentimes, we get caught up in scenarios where we really just like this person and we think they're a really good human, but they may not have expertise in that area, but they're sharp and maybe they can learn it on the job, and, you know, the things will just fall into place. And what we're really doing is hurting the establishment. So we've got to learn how to hire people that are experts, subject matter experts, in each of these particular fields. And so when we do the plug and play, everything comes to fruition and it's just going to scream success. Again, if you're going through a murder trial, you're not gonna hire a tax attorney, right?
No.
Hire an expert lawyer to get you through that scenario. And so we have to do the same thing in the higher education sector. Again, I've had tons of success in the athletic space and as an athletic administrator, but please, do not come to me if you're a search firm thinking that I could be a chief academic officer or a provost. That's not my level.
That's not your stick.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. Man, that journey that you had, starting all the way back from when you decided your program, right? Back when you were looking at programs at Auburn, and then as you move through your journey through education and through professional journey. Yeah. You know, the things that you've seen, when you reflect back, right? And then when you look at your journey, and as you're breaking away from engineered tension, what advice would you have for the younger professionals, especially the ones stuck at dead ends?
Yeah. You know, I polish those social skills. And again, I sympathize with our younger people. We had a global infectious disease that took place in 2020, and, you know, for multiple years, our kids were at home, not really engaging with other people. And as a result, I think our social skills took a nosedive. But now that we're back open, so to speak, for multiple years now, take every opportunity that you can to meet someone in a leadership role, learn more about them, literally hole and swing onto their coattail. Stay in constant contact because you never know what that person may be able to do for you. But, you know, make sure you take advantage of relationships and let's not try to make them transactional either, right? You don't want to come to these individuals just when it seems like every time you just need something. Make it genuine. Keep up with their career paths. Send them notes when you see that they've reached milestones. So it'll be a clear indicator that you're genuinely keeping in touch and staying in constant contact. So I think that's one of the more starting points. And again, as parents, if you're listening, let's do a better job of throwing our kids into the fire and putting them in places and position with people that are that are powerful, right? Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to bring them up to the table with you. Let them see you work from afar. And the only way that we can get there is to continue to do that. Let's force feed them. It's okay if they're uncomfortable. And then we'll give them some homework and teach them on the way home, right? I think that's the most important thing. Being out of sight puts you in a position where you're also out of mind as well.
Yeah. You know, thank you for that. You bring up so many great points in that. And I'm going to hone in on something that I've been, chirping and really, really been promoting on my social channels and LinkedIn starting. If you notice that I called a truce between the two generations, right? Between Gen X and Gen Z. And I was like, okay, hang on, listen. There's some manufactured and engineered tension between us, and we know who they are, right? And who's been in command and control, that generation that just holding on, named the boomers. They need to retire. They need to go home. It's time for that. But, with that said, not pointing fingers, right? Not blaming, but I think there's been some engineered tension in that. And like you were saying, that COVID had a lot to, make a lot of people reclusive, right? And don't know how to interact, right? One of the strangest things I've seen when I was on campus at Auburn or even at Georgetown here is that I'm seeing two young people, dynamic young people, riding on the bus together, but on their phones texting instead of interacting with each other, right? And this whole concept of friend groups, my wife was telling me about, about friend groups that they have, and that if you're not in their friend group, meaning their social group online, that they really don't interact with you, right? Yeah. And I find that as a trained social scientist, I find that very intriguing, but yet disturbing. And yet, you highlighting these points of making yourself available, right? Celebrating others, right? Be authentic. Gen Z is a generation that hollers and loves to talk about authentic. Paul Wilson Jr. and I, we had a conversation about ghosting and about authenticity, with this generation and encouraging and discussing that. And just Gen Xers as myself and yourself, we talk about how to, open up these doors, right? Yeah. And that we call the truce, right? We're here to help, but you guys got to come with it, right?
Yeah. No question about it. It's interesting that you bring this topic up. I was just witnessing my son's basketball team. They had an exhibition game, and on the way back, the coach stopped somewhere and they gathered somewhere to eat before they got back to the school. And they all have gotten their meals, and they're all sitting around each other in this restaurant, and they're all on the phone. Mm. And I use that as a moment, a teachable moment. And, I said to them, I've never seen a team that coexisted really well that wasn't successful. But I've seen an enormous amount of teams that didn't coexist really well. They stunk throughout the season. You know what I mean? So put the phones away, man, and learn and use this time to learn something about each other. In the classroom and at school, you're limited on how much you can talk. You get in trouble if you talk too much in the classroom, right?
Right.
You have the free opportunity to say any and almost everything to each other in the space of just your teammates. Take advantage of that time and learn something different about one of your teammates. It may help you in your approach and how you interact with them daily, depending on what you learn,
Right. Right.
And after that, they took advantage of that scenario, and we learned that, there's a kid on the team that doesn't have any parent right now. He lost both of them when he was young. And so now the group rallies around this individual, and now their approach to this young man is a lot different from everybody else, and it should be, right?
It should be.
So, we have to take time, man, to learn each other. And these devices in our hands, while they're extremely helpful, it could be a detriment to.
Yeah, man, I'm old school, man. If a text is longer than one sentence, I'm calling. You know, if someone sends me a page of text, I'm like, I don't even read it.
That's right. Yeah, and my patience may wear a little bit too thin. If I think I need an answer to that text immediately, I don't want to wait for you to reply. So I'm like, I'll just call, Maybe get my answer in real time. I'm with you. So.
Right. On that, some different cultural differences, but also too some norms that exist for success. Right.
Yeah.
Some norms that will help you build in and outside of the system, primarily strongly outside the system, because you have the core skill set. Right? The core mindset for success. Yep. You know, we've been having the conversation trying to encourage the younger generations in trying to get inside this architect mindset, right? For building success, outside the system. What human signal represents is the truth, right? Signal over noise, dialing in and listening to what's not being said. And that's very important. So as we segue into the second part of our show, I'm going to start asking some little bit more tougher questions, thinking not going to be too tough, but a little tough, right? But I'm just trying to dig and tunnel into your mindset, okay?
Sure.
So the old system didn't collapse by accident. It was engineered to divide, optimize, and streamline, favoring consolidation of power. You're known for rejecting safe scripts. You launched the HBC women's wrestling team, and you transformed regional advancement at Notre Dame. What drives your architectural mindset, and how do you choose what systems and teams to build?
Yeah, man, that's an excellent question. You're right. You were going to start off with some tough ones. I guess the easy way to, or the short answer to that is, first of all, it's collaboration. I can't take any of the credit alone. Working at universities, the focal point is always centered around the students, right? If we don't have students, then we don't have jobs. So the more students, the better. So, the focus, especially at small liberal arts colleges, is how can you maintain enrollment and how can you increase enrollment? One of the cheat codes in doing that is adding sports. Every time you add a sport, you get an all-new, unique student. Now, it's not helpful if you add, say, women's volleyball, but you're only taking the athletes off of the women's basketball team. No, coaches, you got to go out and recruit, right? And you got to go get an all-new, unique student to build this all-new women's volleyball program, if that makes sense. So it was a no-brainer for me, and, I like challenges. I like embracing, I like lofty goals and embracing them and see if those goals can actually come to fruition. And so when I was tasked with adding a couple of sports to the university, the first thing I thought about was women's wrestling. Why? Because there was only one other HBCU in the entire country to sponsor the sport, and it was Bluefield State, nearby Virginia. And so I wanted to add to that mix. And so we became the first HBCU to actually have men's and women's wrestling. So that's why I added it. And you fast forward today, that sport is absolutely flourishing at Allen University. I didn't realize how many young girls were wrestling in the southeastern parts of the United States, but it is a big deal. And at some point, fingers crossed, the NCAA currently has it as an emerging sport, so it's not fully sponsored by the NCAA just yet, but we're on the cusp of seeing that come through being a full-fledged sport as well.
Nice. Listen, Disney, if you're listening, this is your next movie. The Jasher Cox story on how he got them sisters at an HBCU. We talking about hair did, nails did, everything did, and convinced them sisters.
Let me tell you, and they will pin you up to a corner. They're this big, but that technique is unbelievable, and they will have you calling for mercy and tapping out. Do not try
tap it out.
Don't do it.
Don't tap. Yeah. Don't. The sisters will tap you out.
Don't do it.
They'll hurt you.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Woo, man, that's a spectacular.
They're so fun to watch. Their meets are unbelievable, full of energy, and the girls are good. They're just good.
Yeah, man, that's just an amazing story, man, and the convincing, right? Especially in a a male-dominated sport, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you come and say, okay, I've been tasked with this job. I got to come up with some new sports. Let's do some women's wrestling. We're not talking about WWE Raw either. We talk about the real wrestling.
The real stuff. Yeah.
Roman Greco wrestling.
That's correct. No, it's a great sport. And, you know, I was blown away at the support that we got within the university's community and the city of Columbia and nearby states and cities. It was great. And like I said, they're doing a phenomenal job right there. And I'm just honestly blessed that I was even a part of it.
Nice. I'm telling you, Disney, this your next movie, right? This your next movie, Disney. Jascha Cox and how he got wrestling started at HBCU.
Well, you know, Disney owes me one, man. You know, the whole contractual agreement with YouTube TV had me in shambles for like 2 weeks, man. You know, couldn't see ESPN. Yeah,
can't see ESPN anything.
He's right. Y'all owe me one, Disney. I'm waiting.
They waiting. If y'all listening, Disney execs, call my man. Call my man. All right, listen, man. We had this is, you know, season finale of a long season, you know, for Human Signal, successful season, I would say. You know, and I had my guest Paul Wilson Jr. on part one of the part two, you know, two-part season finale. And he talked about how we discussed, you know, back and forth. I mean, he argued that Rebels became the gatekeepers, you know, and how do you avoid gatekeeping traps? And instead, you break cycles so the builder class professionals can get a fair shot.
Yeah, it's those three words still, three letters still matter to me. DEI, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. They matter. And I think what's really disappointing is when you hear those three letters, there's so many lazy thinkers out here. They automatically default to that means black people.
Oh, of course.
And I can't tell you how that makes me feel and how shameful it is. I'll share this story with you, Dr. Floor. When I first started at the University of Notre Dame, I was set to get my ID, parking pass, things of that nature. You know, this is like day one of employment type stuff. Mm-hmm. And behind the counter is a gentleman. Behind the counter, he's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so... the process to get an ID and the process to get tags, you've got to go all over the place behind the counter. He's got to grab things from here, grab things from there. But the university has equipped him with the stuff that he needs so he can be functional and efficient at the same time. And you would have never known he was in a wheelchair just based on his speed and how he was able to get things done. But that doesn't happen. We don't see that unless the university has a commitment to focus and hire people that are still fully capable, despite perhaps their shortcomings. And so it's moments like that. You know, you got to be open-minded. And those things really stand out to me. You know, again, we're living in a slimy, difficult time warp right now, and it's not fun. But I like to think about those moments right there, and you've got certain institutions, and again, you know, DC is probably making you rename it and put mascara on it, but I'm proud to be able to work for a university that's not running from diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Notre Dame is standing in that fight, and doing that. And they're blessed to have a man named Jascha Cox with deep roots in doing what's right and standing for what's right and uplifting marginalized populations, right?
Right.
And making sure those opportunities there. You know, I saw your LinkedIn post here a day or so ago, and you were reflecting on the entry point for Notre Dame for admitting their first woman. And how they were celebrating that. Can you briefly talk about that and that reflection point?
Yeah, in the 1970s, the university admitted its first woman student. And so we celebrated that this past fall by unveiling it's called the Notre Dame Circle, but in that, it's a celebratory plaque or monument within that circle that celebrates the women who had success. And not only had success beyond graduating from the University of Notre Dame, but just by being a student. So it was simply celebrating their days as being a student and their success beyond becoming alums of the university. And again, it was a big deal. It's a beautiful monument. And everybody knows Touchdown Jesus, which is basically the library. And we know that reference, but where they staged the monument, it's directly behind it. And so it's in close proximity. It's a beautiful view. And again, another item that sits on that campus that just makes you really, really proud to be an employee.
Nice. You know, those things that matter, right? The small things that matter, right? The reflections that matter, you know, in an inclusive environment that matters, right? Yeah. And, you know, together we are stronger, wiser, and better. And I can definitely see that at Notre Dame through your example.
Yeah, you know, I'll add to that too. The women that I work with, the colleagues that I work with, the students that I see every day, they're brilliant. And again, that place is not what it is today if we don't have women being a part of that campus fabric. I mean, so many in institutional leadership, just powerful, powerful women. If I do have success, they're the reason why. Because the knowledge that I've just been able to absorb from them as colleagues.
Definitely, definitely so, man. We all have strong women in our corners. You know, and we have all strong women standing beside us, lifting us up, holding us up, pulling us up, and leading us. Starting to close out our program here today, you know, we're going to lean in a little bit talking about the great truce. You know, like I said, I call it a truce online. You know, through post and through illustration, you know, and I want to bridge that. I would like to bridge that gap between our generations, Gen X and Gen Z. And so let's talk about alliance and not blame.
Yeah.
The future isn't about finger pointing. It's about bridge building. AI, and I'm going to say Neil because of your field of view, where you are, now acts as a reset button. Restoring resources and knowledge that was once locked away or lost. Mm. Access has been gained. Yeah. Jasher, what signals do you want to send to both to the street smart OGs like ourselves and hungry digital natives tuning in today?
Yeah, you know, this is a great topic. Ironically, just last week I was in a room full of engineering students, and my assumption was, I'm thinking, man, had I had AI back when I was in school, I'd have been a straight A student, you know.
And,
didn't get any laughs whatsoever.
Wow.
You know, they thought it was funny a little bit, but these kids, a lot of these kids aren't relying on AI to do the work for them. As a matter of fact, I was in front of students that they're actually concerned about it, about
how much
information can be done and so fast and the accuracy of it. And so, I'm not going to preach, you know, the Bible talks about each generation becoming weaker, but wiser. Right. And so I would encourage the OGs. I guess if you could say all the unks, as they all say.
I got called unk 2 years ago, bro. They messed my whole paradigm up.
Man, it hurts. It sticks pretty hard now. It's tough now. But, I would encourage some of us in this generation to lean into them and identify what they're doing. And you may identify that sometimes they may not be on the right path. If they think on the right path, you may have to re-guide them, or you just may flat out learn something. At the end of the day, I always tell people, you know, I got about 20 more years before people are going to think I'm old and outdated. And if I still feel like working, guess who I'm going to have to rely on to give me a chance? That generation, right? So it's imperative. And shout out to the old president, the most recent president I worked for at Allen University. His name was Dr. Ernest McNeely. He's in his mid-70s, and this guy's about as tech-savvy as they come. He could actually show some of the younger people how to work a MacBook Pro, you know? Wow. And so I'm happy to see that there are certain people that are still keeping up with the latest trends, because we have to, right?
Right.
And so I'm leaning on this younger generation so I can continue to learn, because if you're not learning, you're just getting old and stale, and eventually you die and wither and go away. Right. I don't do that at 45 or approaching.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, take advantage of some of these people, man. They're creating some really good things. You know, I never thought I'd be living in an environment where kids are becoming millionaires off of just posting social media content, right?
Wow, man. So
regardless of what you want to say about them, they know something.
They know something.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think we need to continue to pour into them. That idea that they've cultivated that's turned into a money stream, help them understand that at some point you're going to have to grow it. What's next? Because that's what successful business people do. They identify what's next and they add layers to it, right? So,
right.
Yeah, so that's my thing on that. We need the younger generation to lead, but we want to make sure we're creating leaders that are capable.
Right, right. And with that leadership, it comes some pain, you know. It comes some lessons learned, you know. And I had a conversation just a couple of weeks ago. It's talking about that, you know, certain laws in nature that you just can't violate. And part of that growth is pain, right? It's that friction. And I've watched so many of the young people, you know, just, you know, that whole ghosting, you know, that's how I got into my definition of ghosting, my understanding of ghosting. And I can relate and I understand, but I was like, man, sometimes it seems like they want to avoid friction. Mm. And I get it, you know, with the inauthenticity, right? I get it, but there's some powerful lessons that can be learned in just going through friction and that you can grow. But I do believe in avoidable suffering, right? So, as us, you know, older generations, and you talked about the past president at Allen University, you know, sounded like he removed any barriers for you, right? That can cause any suffering for you, right? Avoidable suffering, and yeah. Allowed you to permeate and to grow, and he created an environment, but he also led. He reminds me of my 86-year-old grandmother, you know. She'll FaceTime me on her iPhone and her iPad, and she'll text. And she'll do all that stuff with her phone, but I could never get my grandmother to learn a computer. But she picked up on that phone, but she would not touch a computer, right? But on the other hand, my grandfather now, he picked up on the computer, but he wouldn't do the phone thing because he said, I'm not a phone man. I'm not a phone man. So that's just the difference. But watching that generation, you know, embrace, you know, technology and watching, you know, the electricity and seeing young people spark when they talk about, you know, the tech tools and the knowledge. But I really want Gen X, right, to just, I know a lot of us want to be mentors, right? Mm-hmm. We want to pass on the wisdom and a strategy. We were the latchkey generation. Man, we had to get out here and hustle. We had to learn how to do it. And, you know, it's like, you know, you talked about a very important point as we age and we get older. To my man, everything is kind of like in kind, right? Or a biblical reference, you know, you reap what you sow. Right. Yeah. So you sow kindness, you reap kindness. And then you say, yeah, when we become old, 60 something in the workplace, we're going to be relying on these ears. Right. To have mercy on us. Right. Yeah. And not try to send us to the house too fast. Right. I got a few. If I'm useful and if I'm still churning out and being productive in a productive way. Even if I have to redefine productive, that means giving out wisdom and strategy, you know, advice, then so be it. But I know when it's time for Floyd to sit down, I'm going to sit down.
That's right. No question about it. No question about it. I think it's unwise if we don't take advantage of the younger generation and identify what they have to offer. I'm learning from my kids daily. And that's because you know, this one mouth and these two ears that God has given us, man, you know, you can listen twice as much as you talk sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, it helps you learn a little something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, if it wasn't for my kids pushing me, you know, my younger kids, I wouldn't be doing this, right? And I wouldn't even got a Patreon account. They were telling me, Dad, you need to be on Patreon, you know, because you talk some real, real stuff, but you need you need to put that on Patreon. So I say, you know, son, I definitely appreciate that. And they helped me a lot. They got my channels up, helped me get my channels, helped me get a lot of stuff straightened out. And these are my teenage boys that I have. You know, closing out this segment, you know, I want you to do something for our listeners. Okay. We talked about how the old playbook is gone. We talked about how you broke barriers, you know, with women wrestling and you know, you started new programs. We talked about how now the game has changed, you know, how things have been democratized and evened out in a sense where as far as access and equity. We talked about sharing wisdom. We talked about building ladders and bridges, right? And you also talked about architecting institutional change and the importance of that. So we talked about a lot. What is your closing call for action for the Human Signal audience?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. You know, I just think kindness always wins. You know, cool heads always prevail. Emotional intelligence will prevent you from entering in something that you won't be able to get out of. It could be a lifelong mistake. You know, I think it's important now to just be good people, and we got to figure out how we can do that. And my way of trying to do that is just pouring into the youth. My wife will get on to me all the time because if I see youth in a grocery store, if I just see them in a movie theater or randomly, I can't help but to engage with them, right? And sometimes there'll be some engagement that's returned, and sometimes you can tell that they don't want to be bothered.
They don't want to be bothered. Yeah. My wife did the same thing. Leave them kids alone.
That's correct. I can't do it. It's hard for me to do that. But you know, I don't take the credit. I've got good parents. You know, my mom and dad made me speak to people that were older, mm-hmm. acknowledge their presence before anything got underway. You know, and mm-hmm. I'm grateful for that, and I'm trying to teach that with my own kids, and they've received that well. But I mean, you know, we're at a point right now where you can also easily be misled. Let's go back to the old school way. Take your kids to the library, check out a book and have them read it versus thinking that they can Google it online. I Googled some stuff today about our alma mater, about Auburn, and Jim and I returned some information that was just flat out wrong. And
oh, wow.
You know, because I was there.
Yeah.
You know, and so think about that and it being in a classroom setting, and this is something that I have to turn in. It could just be wrong, right?
Yeah.
So let's teach our kids the old school way. Take them back to the library, man. Catalog that thing. Show them.
Not the Dewey Decimal.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. show them their different ways to get information and retain information.
Yeah.
Because right now, our history is being withered away. And what we've known as for decades and centuries, I guess, if you will, to be known as American history isn't always accurate history.
No.
And so, yeah, never stop teaching. I never want to stop learning, but never stop teaching and never stop being a sponge so you can learn as well.
Awesome. That is an excellent point. You know, I tell my kids, you know, to me, I'm a technology guy. I worked 25 plus years in technology and tech, and I'm a tech guy.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I love tech and where it's going and where it's headed. But I tell my kids, I say, you know, for me, an old guy, and I got several degrees, and I've been through my learning pains, right? For me, a tech, you know, using AI is a value add, right? Because I dump into it my knowledge of where I'm going, and it helps me get there faster, right?
That's right.
But for you guys, y'all need to take the approach of looking at AI as the encyclopedia. You remember those Encyclopedia Britannicas we used to have?
Absolutely.
They take you only so far. They get a good start. And I remember several of my classmates, man, the teacher used to bust them. Yeah, you got this out of the encyclopedia, didn't you?
Word for word.
Word for word. That's what you was talking about. You for the next level of knowledge, you either had to talk to someone about it or you had to go to the library. Right, to expand your knowledge. You definitely touched on those points. And it does my heart, you know, great to hear that we have young kids, young people out here that are concerned about AI, right, and concerned about this ethical and responsible use. And that definitely you know, gives me hope about where all of this is headed, right?
That's right.
And I think that, you know, human and AI together is a dynamic combination, you know, wielding it as a tool, right? And not as a crutch. And I think that's where, you know, if I could say that, I think that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, using it as a tool and not a crutch. You can't make it any better than that. You know, last thing I wanted to mention, you know, going back to the other question is understanding what leadership looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think some people have an idea, but if you've never led before, you can walk into the door and you can walk to a hornet's nest and you can learn things right out of the gate. And so I always convince people, I try to convince people, man, you know, try to lead with endearment. Because when people know that they care, they work a lot harder for you when you lead with endearment. I know we're supposed to be at work from 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, but you know what? If I let Pam off at, you know, 4 o'clock so she can catch her son Timmy play T-ball, I'm getting a different employee the next day, right? She knows that I care. I know she's still going to get her job done, whether she left an hour early or not. But let's try to lead with endearment, man. We're in difficult times, and these old, outdated ways of thinking the office has to operate in a certain space is just dead to me, in my opinion. And it's your job to figure out how that works with every single employee in your space. Also learn about leadership. I read a post from Dr. Faison, president at Edward Waters University in Jacksonville, Florida.
You know, he posts a lot, man. That brother is dropping some knowledge.
Solid. We won't hold it against him that he went to the University of Georgia, but he's still in it. No,
we won't get it too.
But at the end of the day, you know, he made a post and he said, understanding leadership is knowing that 90% of the time you may go through something or deal with something publicly, and 90% of the time you will not be in position to defend yourself, and people will just draw their own conclusion. And so you just got to be prepared for that, but that should not stop you from leading in a positive way and doing what's right for your respective employer or organization.
You know, so powerful lessons, you know, and I know we in akin environments, you know, with, you know, I'm a part of the Georgetown family. I used to work for the university and my wife works there, and, you know, you're at Notre Dame, you know, in that Catholic, you know, reach. And one of the things that I learned, the biggest lesson I learned at Georgetown, was they indoctrinated me in the philosophy of curis personalis, care for the whole person. And you touched on that, right? And that's leadership, you know, empathetic leadership, right? Leading out of empathy, having deep empathy for another person. You know what it feels like. If you had kids, right? Man, I want to get to my kids' game, right? Yeah. And giving that professional courtesy, right? That leeway, or the, as we call it, I have heard it said, called the benefit of the doubt, right? That, you know, the person is going to get their job done, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, and I've always led with, I really don't care how you get the work done, as long as it gets done, right? When on time and when it needs to get done. I don't care where you do it, how you do it, and where you get the mode and methodology that you get it done.
Women in sports. And they would come up with all kinds of answers. And the one that I was looking for is that women don't want to be coached like girls. They want to be coached like athletes. And the moment you figure that out, your results are a lot better. They don't want to be cupcake, because they know if you're cupcaking them throughout the week, when it's time to suit up, they're probably going to get dominated by their opponent. So they want you to coach them hard. They want you to push them. They want to be coached like athletes, not women or girls, you know?
Right.
So, and so that's one of the things that I've always made sure I pay attention to. Even, you know, I spoke about hiring and making sure we're putting people in the right places so an enterprise can actually succeed.
Man, that's really great. I mean, about that frame of reference, right? That mindset. Being in that builder's mindset, being in that architect's mindset, right? Coaching from a strength position, right? Pulling out that strength out of individuals, right? Pushing them, right? But it all starts with the home team. It starts with yourself. And that's a great challenge that you put before coaches, right? When you're screening them for your departments, for your athletic programs. And listen, you at Notre Dame, man, and that's why they're blessed to have you, because you got that, you bringing that mentality over there, man. Listen, this wraps us up, our season 1 part 2 finale, with Jasher Cox, you know, showing up, you know, and sharing and his heroic visibility. We're going to issue you a heroic visibility badge for being a guest on our show. We'll get that out to you. Check your email, and you can probably display that badge on LinkedIn, on all your socials. We issue that badge out for people who are building and doing bold architectural thinking and sharing the future for builders in every field. Jasher, Thank you so much.
Yeah, trust me, I will wear that badge with honor. Again, I'm certainly grateful that you thought enough about me to have me as a guest. I feel absolutely honored and beside myself to be a part of your show. And congratulations to you and your success with this platform. And trust me when I tell you, I'll continue to watch along the way. Thank you.
No doubt. Thank you, my brother. We appreciate you.
You bet. Thank you.